Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. I'm joined now by Les Leopold, who is the co-founder and director of two nonprofit educational organizations, the Labor Institute and the Public Health Institute. He designs research and educational programs on occupational safety and health, the environment, and economics. He also serves as a strategic consultant to the Blue-Green Alliance, which brings together trade unions and environmental organizations. And his latest book just out is How to Make $1 Million an Hour, Why Hedge Funds Get Away with Siphoning Off America's Wealth. Welcome to Background Briefing, Les Leopold.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
So there's a connection here, I guess, the fact that today Forbes released their list of the top 100 billionaires in the world. And here you are with a book, How to Make $1 Million an Hour. There's got to be a connection.
Oh, there's definitely a connection. But there's an even bigger connection to the obscene level of inequality that we're facing in the country right now. What got me going was that I calculated that the top hedge fund earner, and this was in 2010, earned as much in 1 hour as the average American family makes in 47 years. Think about that for a second. Somebody gets in 1 hour what it takes a family a lifetime to earn. So the question led me to start thinking about, well, what do these people do? And are they doing anything that is remotely useful for the economy or for society? And what I was hoping to do is get us outside this framework where we say, okay, there's rich people and poor people, and we should, you know, obviously tax the rich people more to help the poor people not be so poor. But it's always assumed that the rich people's richness is legitimate. But we don't examine how it is that they attain this money. And so this book is what turns out to be an indictment about how these super rich people end up getting their wealth.
So tell me, how does a hedge fund work? It's obviously other people's money, but how can they make so much money so quickly and presumably make money for their clients as well as for themselves?
Well, let's define what a hedge fund is. It's an investment fund, and it can invest anywhere in the world using any kind of technique it wants, and it's only for wealthy people. You can't invest in a hedge fund if your income has to be over $200,000 a year, and you have to have at least $1 million worth of net worth. Your wealth has to be $1 million or over. So it's really a plaything only for a super rich. And what they do is they find ways to make interest rates that are interest returns, you know, investment returns that are way beyond anything that the rest of us can imagine. They want double-digit returns. They want 10, 20, 30% a year returns on their money. And the way it works is the hedge fund manager, he gets 2% of the money at a minimum, just when you give it to him, and then he gets 20% of the profits that he can generate. So the question becomes, well, what do they do to generate those profits? And as I start to push into this, I just couldn't believe what I came up with. I mean, I think the rest of us would basically say that they make their money by cheating. A lot of what they do on a day in and day out basis is ethically suspect. Some of it's actually illegal. And most of us would find it incredibly ethically suspect. And what we did is we set up the book as a kind of how-to book, tongue-in-cheek. So each chapter is another step on how you can make $1 million an hour. And most of the steps are about how you can skate out to the ethical edge and beyond. And some of them just completely blew me away. I had no idea that this is what they were doing. I think the readers will be amazed.
If you have to, your clients expect double-digit returns on their money, over 10%. Of course, you know, banks pay next to nothing nowadays, and so do T-bills and municipal bonds. So how do you, if that's the kind of yield that they expect, they're not looking at long-term investments. They're not looking at what capitalism is supposed to do, which is to nurture companies and develop products. They're just looking for where they can make the most money the quickest, isn't it? Isn't that what's going on?
Yeah, you've got me laughing because one of the techniques that certain hedge funds use is called high-frequency trading. And they have these supercomputers that they situate right next to the stock market, so they get the feed from the markets in nanoseconds. And they're able to figure out what the rest of us who don't have this high-speed technology are going to do. So in a sense, they can predict the future. But one of these guys that I I'll get into that in a second, but one of these guys that is doing this has not had a losing day in 5 years. And for him, a long-term hold of a stock is 2 seconds. He never holds a stock for more than 2 seconds. And what they're able to do is they will make like a million trades a minute, but they withdraw them. So let's say you're on E-Trade and you're trying to make a for your 401k, you're trying to make an investment. By the time you press the button, between that time and the time the trade goes through, a high-frequency trader has bought the stock that you want to buy and sold it back to you at a slightly higher rate than you thought you were going to pay, a few pennies more here and there. Those few pennies add up to 5 to 20 million, a billion dollars a year. They're basically, it's a hidden tax that they're taking from all the other investors. And as far as I can tell, it's a entirely useless activity. It should be completely wiped out. But yet there are, you know, billions and billions of dollars wrapped up into this. And that's, look, if you can, it's a can't miss proposition. It's a wonderful way to get a high rate of return for your millionaire investors. That's one technique. There's your long-term hold to help the capitalist economy.
Well, as you know, Leslie Appold, we're at a point now where, again, the Republicans have gone to the mat for the billionaires. And what is going on with this sequester? And, of course, unfortunately, our press is so slavish in terms of covering both sides of the story that it's not really clear, which it should be, how cynical the Republicans are in deliberately destroying the economy and reversing the slow recovery in order to destroy Obama's presidency. That is the stated goal of Mitch McConnell, and he is the one who's holding up any activity in the Senate to do anything about the economy and this sequester. And the Republicans have managed to somehow tell the American people through our disgusting press that this is all about not raising taxes, when nobody is talking about raising taxes on working Americans or the middle class. They are only talking about raising taxes on hedge fund managers and closing these loopholes, like this carried interest loophole that allows them to pay so little tax, as we learned from Mitt Romney's tax returns. This is what the racket's about, and yet the entire government of the United States has been held hostage to the handful of billionaires who the Republicans are prepared to go to the mat for. I don't understand why this is not made clear to the American people, and how criminal and irresponsible and petty these Republicans are in terms of their insane hatred of Obama and their determination that he is a failed president.
Everything you say is true. But I think the reason that we're not seeing the kind of attention to the very issues that you're talking about is because the Democrats also do not want to go after these hedge fund guys. When I was putting the book together, I tried to get a statement from Timothy Geithner about a financial transaction tax. And his office gave me a statement totally opposed to it, thinks it's a bad idea. But, of course, it would put the high-frequency trainers totally out of business. There's a congressman in Colorado, Congressman Jared, who's extremely liberal. And he has like 100% AFL-CIO rating. And he and another liberal congressman sent a letter to President Obama in support of the carried interest loophole, which allows these hedge fund people to pay, then it was 15%, now it's 20% tax rate instead of the normal, they should be paying 39% right now. So you have this, unfortunately, you have co-conspirators. I'll grant you, the Republicans are totally trying to destroy President Obama. But when it comes to taking on Wall Street, to change the conversation, you have to take on Wall Street. Wall Street should have been the central central piece in this discussion about the sequester. How did we get here? Why are we talking about having to tighten our belt? Because Wall Street took down the economy. And that was a symbiotic relationship between hedge funds and big banks on Wall Street. And they literally tore a hole, a gaping hole, out of the center of the economy. We tell that story in the book, but also part of that story is, you know, you have Senator Schumer from New York. He's the senator from Wall Street, and he's the number three person in the Senate. So we need to change it. We need pressure from the outside, and we had it for a while with Occupy Wall Street, and now it faded. And if you notice, the conversation before Occupy Wall Street was about the grand bargain and austerity. And then when Occupy Wall Street hit, it was about the 1% and the 99% and the problems from Wall Street. And as soon as Occupy Wall Street was repressed or faded or whatever, however you want to say it, the conversation went right back to austerity. So a positive people's movement makes an enormous difference. I don't think we can depend on the Democrats to do it for us, I'm sorry to say.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, the only people that are doing anything for us happen to be Democrats, like Elizabeth Warren.
True.
Elizabeth Warren is the person who came up with the financial transaction tax and the other day.
And there are others. There are others, yeah. I grant you. The thing is that we have to create a big enough fuss so there's more. What's happened now is that, in a sense, the Tea Party controls the conversation. The Tea Party, you know, Ayn Rand right wing has pulled both parties to the right. And we need more progressive resistance. And to get there, one of the goals of this book is we have to delegitimize the way these super rich people get their money, because we have a tautology in this country which goes something like this. These people are rich, they're smart, and if they're rich and smart, it must be that they're producing value for the economy because they're rich and smart. And it just goes around in a circle. And they walk on water. They give big donations to Central Park and in New York and to the museum, public library, and they're philanthropists, and everybody's kissing their butts. And no one's and in a sense they're the modern day pirates, and we're letting them go unscathed. So we have to do some delegitimizing. We have to ask the question: show us what you do that is of value for you getting all this money. Because we have a term for this in economics; it's called an economic rent, which is another word for ripoff. And in fact, I think that's what's going on here. They've used loopholes in the system to literally siphon off our wealth. They're not creating value, and that's part of the struggle, which I think will help in the bigger struggle that you're describing. I think they're connected.
Again, I'm speaking with Les Leopold, the co-founder and director of two nonprofit education organizations, the Labor Institute and the Public Health Institute. He's the author of the new book just out, How to Make $1 Million an Hour, Why Hedge Funds Get Away with Siphoning Off America's Wealth. And we're talking to him on the day that Forbes came out with a list of the top 100 families in this country, starting out with Carlos Slim of Mexico, followed by Bill Gates in number two. And then third, by the way, is Amancio Ortega from Spain, the value of $57 billion. And of course, you know, the Spanish economy is in free fall. There's over 55% unemployment amongst the young, and go figure. I mean, this is you can see this financial engineering that's going on to feed and concentrate more and more wealth in the hands of fewer and fewer people. It seems to be happening globally. It's not just an American phenomenon.
Oh no, it's obscene, and you know, the major financial players here and in Europe develop the games that you know, the mutual policies on both sides of the ocean that deregulated finance set this in motion. See, high finance, the hedge funds, set the bar for compensation for all the other CEOs, both financial and non-financial. I mean, if some 35-year-old guy is making $100 million a year doing these games, and here he's got 50 employees, and you've got 50,000 employees, you say, well, hey, you know, I want to make a lot of money too. So we've got to pull down the top, the tippy top, in a hurry. If we have the time, I want to give you one more example of one of the biggest ways that these guys made some money during the crash, or right after the crash. Imagine the following. I am going to sell you a house, but I've designed the house so that it will catch fire and burn to the ground within 6 months. And without you knowing it, I have taken out an insurance policy on the house. So I'm going to get paid when I sell you the house, and then I'm going to get paid again when the house burns to the ground. Now, that seems to be unethical, at the very least. I can't imagine that taking place anywhere else in capitalism. I mean, there's planned obsolescence, et cetera, but that's not the same as having the product blow up in 6 months. But that's precisely what happened between the big banks and the hedge funds in the midst of the housing crisis. They designed products that were designed to fail so they could take out the insurance against them, and then they pawned that stuff off all over the globe. And all the big banks got caught doing this. There was government investigations. Goldman Sachs and the famous Abacus case had to pay a $550 million fine. But the person that they colluded with, the hedge fund guy that they colluded with, walked off with $1 billion, and didn't have to pay it back. And yet what they were doing was designing a product based on high-risk mortgages that was designed to fail. They put the worst stuff in the package, told people it was a good package, and then were waiting for it to blow up so they could collect the insurance. Now, that seems to me, whether it's illegal or not, is irrelevant. That shouldn't happen. That should not happen. And we have no chance of doing anything about the income distribution ever if we're going to allow that kind of stuff to go on. So this book is designed to try to help us all understand the games that these people play and increase our outrage. Did you catch this thing about the payday loans? Did you catch this?
No, what is it quickly?
My God. There's 15 states have payday loans is basically loan sharking, right? Where you
sure.
Give somebody a loan on the payday and then you charge 500, 600,000% interest, basically. And, you know, every state in the union has usury law. No place allows higher than a 25% interest rate. And 15 states have banned this practice entirely. So they moved to the Internet. In order to operate on the Internet, they need banks to process the money so they automatically can take it from the victim's accounts. So the J.P. Morgan Chase, amongst other banks, got involved as basically being the clearinghouse for these illegal loan sharking companies, right? So, because they're circumventing, they're operating in states without illegally. So, why would they do this? Why would J.P. Morgan Chase possibly get involved in loan sharking? Well, catch this. This is the part that'll just kill you. They do this because inevitably the victim ends up, and they're usually, you know, low income, single moms, you know, living on child support payments, but they have a bank account. Well, they inevitably overdraw, right? So because they overdraw, J.P. Morgan Chase can get those extra fees. So they end up like, taking $600, $700, $800 a month out of this person's account in overdraft fees.
Wow.
So you've got a double whammy. The Sopranos would be embarrassed to have this kind of loan sharking. I mean, Tony Soprano would blush over this. Double whammy.
Thanks so much for joining us, Les. Again, I've been speaking with Les Leopold, the co-founder and director of two nonprofit organizations, the Labor Institute and the Public Health Institute. He designs research and educational programs on occupational safety and health, the environment, and economics. He also serves as a strategic consultant to the Blue-Green Alliance, which brings together trade unions and environmental organizations. His latest book just out is How to Make $1 Million an Hour, Why Hedge Funds Get Away with Siphoning Off America's Wealth. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the Kenyan elections, which so far have not been mired in violence.